Thanks, team. I gotta say, over the last couple months, I've hung out with some Christians a few times, and at no point were the music leaders a quarter as talented as ours. So, thanks for using your gifts. You know, having artists. Sorry, my niece is giving me the eye. We have a lot of artists that are really engaged, and that's just changes the whole feeling of the community. You guys know Maya Angelou. She's, I think, you know, dancer and a choreographer and a poet and an author and a lot of things. But I want to use this poem that she wrote for the 50th anniversary of the United Nations being formed in the mid-90s. And she read it there. It's called The Brave and Startling Truth. And I just want to do the first stanza here. I can't really do her voice, so I'll just do it in my voice. But if you haven't heard her read it, you may want to put it on YouTube. We, this people, on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. Now, this beginning here, this is really just a setup. It doesn't offer much explanation to what you're like if you've reading this for the first time or whatever, you're like, well, what is the brave and startling truth? And there's 11 stanzas, so she doesn't get there right away. But she, as you know, it's kind of about the United Nations, and she's going to take it to this cool place. She's going to weave a beautiful image of the exceptionalism of humanity among creation, and that we have a choice to make in between either living in harmony or living in ways of domination. So we're not going to interpret the art piece exactly the same way as she probably intended, and I apologize if that offends you, but we're going to take it somewhere a little more cosmic, yet a lot more practical, I think, simultaneously. We're going to get into a time of recognizing with wonder the power and potential that God makes us with, and moreover invites us with all of creation into this wonderful dance of redemption. So for those of you who didn't know before Lauren or Greg mentioned it, I was on a four-month sabbatical until this morning, or midnight last night, I guess, if you were watching Facebook as I reactivated my account and put up about 5,000 pictures or something like that. But thank you. It was truly a wonderful gift, and I hope to be able to share a lot of the experiences and the lessons that I learned probably over the next couple years, rather than trying to cram them all in right away. But I want to see if we can get some dialogue going about this brave and startling truth, and maybe even talk about what that might be for us today. We all have this common experience that we're trying to work out. We have had our hearts touched by Christ, and we want to, and we have to do something about it. We want to respond together to this wonderful work of shalom that the Spirit is continuing to do in the world. So one of the major components of my sojourn was for my family to go to Colombia for about 25 days for a cultural breakup with the United States, an immersion into another language and culture, and working on our Spanish skills. With that being said, mi familia y yo nos fuimos a Colombia por 25 días por un terminado cultural con los Estados Unidos, una inmersión dentro de una lengua y cultura diferente y trabajar en nuestras habilidades españoles. I had to have my genius check it out for grammar, and she fixed it a little bit. So Mike Hennigan drove us to the airport on a Saturday morning. We left around 8 a.m. and we landed in Bogota, which is the capital city. There's over 7 million people in this city. It's very big city feeling, you know, it's enormous. It's also at an elevation of over 8,000 feet in these mountains. So it's big and it's high. Anyway, so we arrived there just before 9 p.m., and it's only an hour different time zone. So if you've ever been to, like, a large international airport in a foreign country, you know that, like, you get off the plane, all you want to do is pee, and you have to wait through another hour of lines with packed people who half of them are frustrated because they're coming home and all these dumb foreigners are in the way, and the other half are just so confused, like, they don't know what a line is anymore, and they're just like, which way do I go? Do I go backwards? And we're all carrying all these bags and stuff for a month's journey. You know, I got two little kids, I got my strong wife. But we're also traveling with my sister-in-law and her three kids that are all under six, and they all packed twice as much as all of us combined. So we're like rolling deep, right, through the airport. It's a little bit chaotic to get through the, you know, the immigration and the customs and everything, bumping into each other. There's different cultures have different social space respect. So how much social space can there be between us, and what is appropriate or not appropriate? In Colombia, a little bit closer than maybe we would be used to. So anyway, we're kind of feeling a little bit chaotic, right? We've been traveling a long time. We got to pee or whatever, so don't worry about that. That's not where this story's going. But we get out finally to the door to the outside, and we're waiting there, and like the Star Wars doors open, you know, like, psh, psh. And we see out there, there's a little sidewalk about 5 feet back. There's one of those like steel barricades, you know, that you do for like the Mummers Parade or something like that. And on the other side, there's like, I don't know, 5 million people or something like that. No, but there's a couple thousand people, it seemed like, just mobbing up to the barricade, being so excited and full of enthusiasm. So it was kind of wild. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, wow, people in Colombia are so nice. You know, here I show up for 1 second and a couple thousand of them show up to greet us. And turns out it wasn't exactly like that. But when we got outside, we're working our way through this crowd, and it's kind of hectic. We got the one, like, you know, two-year-old kid or whatever kind of dopily walking around like two-year-olds do. And we finally get through the crowd. It's like this three-foot tunnel, and there goes my sister-in-law's brother, if you can follow my relative so far. This is Gustavo, and he just shows up. He's like, oh, hey, what's up? And he's not stressed out at all. He's just like, oh, we're at the airport. Give me your bags. We're going to walk just a little bit down the road. That's where we're going to have two cars that we're somehow going to pack all this stuff into these two tiny little, you know, Latin American vehicles and take us to their suite apartment. And that was the kind of, that was like my moment of liminality, you know, that moment where we're separated from what we think is normal life. We're surrounded by people that we can't really understand, doing things that we're not accustomed to, going through lines and crowds, not feeling secure. And when Gustavo showed up, it was a profound experience for us. For him, he's just driving down the road, helping people get into a car and bringing them back to his house. Now, that's kind of normal, you know, but it's special. You know, it was nice. You know, he actually extended effort to do it, even though he wasn't confused. So, Gustavo and his wife Claudia are just doing their thing in a nice way. You know, getting into the crowd was not a big thing. They understood what people were saying and doing. They knew the streets. They knew what the street signs aren't marked half the time in a way that I understand. They knew the speed limits. They know how you're supposed to straddle the center lane when you drive, if you've ever been to Colombia. My family did not know any of this stuff. And that's kind of one of those brave and startling truths, that they knew how to do some stuff that is really basic in a moment through a relationship that would change our lives that day. Showing up with this kind of being sent, doing something that they already knew how to do, made a huge difference for us. And that's kind of, Bible tells the same story here if you get into the middle of Paul's letter to the Romans. And a lot of what this is about today for me that I hope to get us working on is about how to move through busyness, how to move through this kind of low purpose response time, and how to move beyond best blocking. So this is This is kind of how Paul may have said it in more of a vernacular for us. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life. You're sleeping, you're eating, you're going to work, you're walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants for you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you and develops well-formed maturity in you. That's nice, right? Fix your attention on God. And, you know, you could probably still do things. You know, most of us have jobs, you know, like you can do things like go to work and you can maintain your attention on God while you're at work, right? Some people, not so much. Some people get fired when they do that, or they get in trouble at least because you're supposed to be, I mean, I don't know if any of you are working in like sweatshops right now or something like that, but if you're too focused on God, you'd like cut your hand off or something like that. That's not exactly what I mean by attention, but it's a busyness, you know, like the way people work and the way, you know, a lot of us, especially, you know, people under 40 who are kind of navigating through multiple careers, how they work is, it's kind of just pittering around doing 100 things at the same time, text messaging while they work and things like that. And that's kind of fun, I guess, but it can be dangerous. And not dangerous because you're going to lop off your arm so much as it's dangerous that you're becoming this busy person. And busy people have a hard time fixing their attention on God. So our busyness let me rephrase this as a question. Is your busyness so important to you that you would need to protect it so much? Like, how many times has somebody asked you, can I meet you to talk about something important? And you say back without even thinking, you know, I can't, I'm too busy this month. You know, and you always seem to say it before you even thought about what's actually more important to God or to you, hang out with them or being busy. To get beyond busyness, you don't need to learn necessarily how to do less, but you need to fix your attention on God before you even get busy in the morning, and focus your attention on God during your day full of temptations towards busyness and into your fun and action and restful nights. What a lot of us struggle with also, I think, is a low sense of purpose. And this, I think, is keeps a lot of us down. We wouldn't verbalize it like that probably, but I think the Creator made us to be did not make us to be a drone, just kind of bouncing around the world, reacting to what other people do, what other people say, what other people are willing to pay us or not, what other people tell us we have to pay for things. You know, so I'm reacting a bit to what I think other people want from me on a daily basis. So I react to try not to get into trouble too much. I think you probably can relate to that. You know, I don't want to make any headlines, you know, that would be embarrassing, or to seem so conceited that I would have to change anything about the brokenness I see in the world or in my friends. By the time we're done talking ourselves out of doing something meaningful for someone else, something that really matters to them, you know, we've already watched 3 episodes that day of Breaking Bad and can't get off the couch. We'll say, oh, I'll do something nice for someone else tomorrow. Today I just needed BB time. You know, or more likely, you know, we found something else to occupy us that's similarly nice for the moment. You know, God doesn't want to just be your tag-along buddy or, you know, your little buddy who sparkles up your day once in a while. You know, that's the immature stuff that Paul's talking to the Romans about, who are always trying to find theology that justifies their dominating and selfish lives. And our culture can be similarly immature. All right, here's a question. If you thought, truly believed, that God had something to tell you every day, and it might even be specific as something that you needed to do that day or someone you needed to talk to or touch, would that change the way that you prayed? Or would that change the way you took a shower or put on your clothes or got ready? The Apostle Paul was not just doing low purpose timing stuff when he encouraged those Romans to basically pay attention to God so that when you get the word, you move immediately. That stuff is super important, and you have to practice. You have to. It takes you a while to get that clear in your attention. Well, both of those things are basically similar temptations of what I want to call best blocking. It's easy to not do your best. It's easy to not hustle. It's easy to ride the wake of someone else doing their best. You can feel good vicariously because your friends are doing their best. Doing your best makes you sweat and look awkward. Right? And this is something I want to just explore a little bit to humanize this, because I think you may be thinking that it's just like, you know, a go get 'em kind of a halftime speech. I was in around Philadelphia for the Olympics this year, so I kind of missed out on some good fun. And when you start to do your best, I just wanted to humanize Kurt. One of these people are going to get the benefit of like a normal picture, right? When Kurt's doing his thing, he looks crazy. And that's doing your best, you know? How would you like to be like on the front cover of the paper, you know? But if this was a game-winning goal or something like that, you'd be like, oh, I guess that'd be okay. But doing your best makes you look kind of crazy, you know? Even if you're feeling like this is a good moment of trust. You trust somebody. How awkward can it get, man, when you're really running, you know, as hard as you can get, or getting whacked in the face, right? Like, yeah, okay. And men and women both look awkward when they're doing their best. I just wanted to make sure that we understood that. And my favorite one, though, has to be this dude. Oh, my God. What is he doing? But I know if we played table tennis, I wouldn't even score. You know what I mean? This guy is it's a baller. So there's a lot of good reasons for you to best block, right? So you never get your picture taken looking like that and get put on a slide for a talk, right? That's like one reason. But we think we might be too busy to do our best. We have this sense of low purpose in our response time. But I think the major factor that keeps us from go ahead and doing our best and not blocking ourselves or others from doing our best is because we're afraid of what if. What if it actually worked? What would that mean? What would I have to change? How would people see me differently? How might I see myself differently? That's hard to cross over to the other side. I think doing your best is sometimes going to look something as like significant and fabulous as like the pizza brain opening, right? You know, where it's just like people doing their best and it just kind of knock it out of the park, right? And it's like you've heard that talk for a long time. Finally happens and the pizza's amazing. You know, like how often does that actually happen? You know, where there's all of this hard work and then it goes and it's awesome. You know, or the stuff that Blue's done at Leota's for almost 3 years, these entrepreneurial, enthusiastic people with a vision and they're executing. It's awesome. That's not what it's like most of the time. And for most of us, most of our days of our entire life, it will mean something completely different. And that's all right. I mean, I hope everybody gets their moment in the USA Today or whatever, but for something good. But probably it means to get beyond best blocking on the day-to-day. For us, it's going to begin with a confident understanding of the startling truth that God brings out the best in us and wants to bring out the best in you today. It's kind of like I can't do it. That guy, you know, like the passage in Romans was talking about. This is kind of one of the things that the Holy Spirit does. So it's not like something necessarily that you have to just do all the time, but it's happening in you as you're relating to the Holy Spirit. So you're going to need to recognize that you can even, you can do a lot of stuff. You know a lot of stuff that's super important to other people, even that people that you already know or people that you're about to meet, you know, kind of like Gustavo in my story. So, you know, go for it. Be unleashed so that somebody's heart can be touched. You know, why not be a sent person that isn't just looking to follow the rules of some weird Christianity or to be the kind of person that wants to do just enough to not feel guilty? You know, there are people that you already know, people that you are about to meet, maybe even in this room, that need you to care about them. And most of the time, you get to use the skills and tools that you already have. Most of you know how to find a dentist, how to get on the L, what night is trash night on your block, where you go to find good tea, how to let somebody use your internet signal, not just steal other people's. Come on, folks. Share the load. How to change a tire. You know, these are opportunities for you to do something special for someone else. To get to the next level that's beyond just like doing good and purposefully trying to touch people, although that's pretty great, you'll need a little more time with the Lord. We also do a ton of prayer times and worship times, and we do a lot of training around here too, and incubating sent people to share the love of Jesus in a way that matters to normal people. We got to be a part of a discipleship process to further mature and be a blessing to the rest of our larger community. So here's one more little thought about the kind of prayer that brings us into this brave and startling truth. And this is from Thomas Merton, who I spent a bunch of time reading his stuff the last couple months. And he's talking about his process of living a pretty intense life of prayer. And when he actually went into this monastery, he says that I came in revolt, which is just like a really great way to start a paragraph about prayer, I think. But I came in revolt against the meaningless confusion of a life in which there was so much activity, so much movement, so much useless talk, so much superficial and needless stimulation, that I could not remember who I was. But the fact remains that my flight from this world is not a reproach to you who remain in the world, and I have no right to repudiate the world in a purely negative fashion, because if I do that, my flight will have taken me not to truth and to God, but to a private, though doubtless pious, illusion. So let's be quiet for a minute. I'll lead us in a short prayer, and then we have some time if you want to add some of what you're working with, too.